Howdy, and thanks for tuning in to the Home Stretch Podcast, 101 Plus Tips for Navigating Assisted Living and Nursing Homes. I am your host, Chad Schmidt, and here you're going to discover the questions to ask from the researchers, professionals, and institutions so that you can make a more informed decision. In today's 14-minute episode, I had a conversation with Alex Tanzi. He is an editor and a managing editor for Bloomberg, who has an economics background, but he recently started a column in the demographic section and will occasionally write on global trends. We're going to talk about the article that he wrote titled, "The Fastest Growing Jobs That Pay $24,000 Annually." He's going to share some of the growth that's occurring over the next decade, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and the dollar per hour that a home health aide receives in compensation. He has a couple of tips and some changes that are happening in local jurisdictions, and I hope that you thoroughly enjoy this episode over the next 15 minutes. Share a little bit about this article that you wrote, these home health aides that are being paid less than $24,000 a year. Why did you decide to even write this article?
Every 2 years, the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out projections on which jobs are going to grow the fastest, both in percentage terms and also in numbers over the next decade. So they just put out new data for 2018 to 2028, even though we're in 2019. And over that time period, lots of the fastest growing jobs are in healthcare. Unfortunately, some of the fastest growing pay quite low. So personal care aides and home health aides, which sound similar, but they're a little bit different. Also registered nurses, which pays quite a bit better. That's the number three fastest growing job. And then you also have medical assistants among the top 20, nursing assistants among the top 20. So there's quite a few healthcare-related positions that are going to expect it to grow fast as the population gets older.
Well, I can tell you right now that there's approximately 12,000 different options in the state of Texas when it comes to home health aides, hospice care, assisted living, a nursing home, a daycare center, somebody that has an intellectual disability and they need professional care, or someone that's in a pediatric facility that can provide daycare. There's a lot of different options. And of those 12,000 or more options, 6,000 of those are the home health aides. So there's a lot of competition when it comes to, at least in the state of Texas, people that can go visit a house that can be a 24-hour nurse or supervise in the convenience of somebody's house. I'm aware that those businesses don't pay everything that they charge the client, because there's people that are paying with Medicare or Medicaid, and then there's people that are paying out-of-pocket expense. But what have you been able to discover?
That field is really quite interesting because there's a few companies out there that do quite well providing employment in these type of situations. So either they provide employees to nursing facilities or directly to people's homes. And they don't charge a little bit of money for that. The different entities are charged quite a bit, but there's not a whole lot of money flowing to the actual person who's assigned the position. $24,000 on average is quite low. It's less than $500 a week. And it's a very difficult job. Unfortunately, it doesn't flow to the people that provide the work.
In my own story, my grandmother had a stay-at-home nurse, lived with us 5 days a week. And then the weekend she would take off, and we had another nurse that would take care of my grandmother on the weekend. The nurse is there 24 hours a day. They're often interrupted in the middle of their sleep to be able to take care of somebody. But the way that the laws are written is that you have to account for 8 hours of sleep and 3 hours for meals, which means you can get paid at a maximum for 13 hours worth of work
even though technically you're there 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
A home health aide is usually working more than 13 hours a day. They're getting paid somewhere between 10 in some cases to $16, maybe a little bit more than that per hour. And it makes me want to throw up in my mouth because of how disgusting it is that these people that are in the trenches doing the day-to-day duties are being, in some cases, taken advantage of, because this job isn't for everybody.
No, it's definitely not.
It requires a certain touch. And
I mean, in 2018, the median pay was $11.57 an hour. So that's less than a lot of fast food workers. Amazon recently announced everyone there is making $15 an hour. I think Walmart's the same. So there's a lot of jobs out there where people can make more. At the same time, people don't typically save for this type of expense. So the families have to come up with quite a bit of money, even though it's low paying. If it's 13 hours every day that you're shelling out, it's more than $100 a day. Once you pay the fee to the company, you're probably paying $250 a day or something. So it adds up quite a bit for the family, even though the provider isn't necessarily doing well financially. It's also a burden on the families to fund this type of care.
I was actually at a store recently to pick up a microphone from a camera store, and the individual I was speaking with told me about not his own personal situation, but somebody else that he knew that had a nurse that was coming to the house, and given this fact of how low paying the worker is, it makes sense, his story, that this individual was stealing the prescription medications that were painkillers and muscle relaxers, and they found out because the person who had hired this nurse had counted specifically how many pills were remaining in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got home later that evening, he counted them again and discovered there was only a few that were remaining. And there was close to two dozen that were there when he first counted. And so he actually confronted the nurse, who denied it, and ended up getting the local authorities involved, who then made him part of the investigation because they assumed that he was the one that was stealing the medication. But ultimately they discovered that it was the nurse, and they fired the nurse. And so there's financial pressures that some of these workers experience that lead them to doing things that maybe aren't as ethical. And sometimes they just exit the industry, or they change jobs quite a bit because they're not getting compensated well enough.
Given the size of drug abuse issue in the U.S., it doesn't surprise me at all that this occurs. I would strongly recommend to anyone to do something similar and count the number of pills, and also to really see if elderly people, because sometimes they get prescribed things over the years and doctors change and their medical condition changes, and people don't even know what they're taking anymore, why they're taking certain pills. So it's really important for the families to stay on top of what's going on, and both the number of pills and also if they actually need that type of pill on an ongoing basis.
There's other stories which I'm not going to mention here, but in terms of economics, there's about 10,000 people a day that turn 65 and about 4,000 a day that turn 80. What are the other things that you have been able to discover about the impact that our economy is going to have with not just the job force that caters to the elder population, but also finances available from the government to be able to pay for some of these services that individuals may be looking for?
Those numbers you cited are correct. I think it's by 2030, 1 million people will be over the age of 100. It's kind of staggering. So in one sense, it's great, but you really want people to have a good quality of life too. In terms of the impact on finances, I think it's really hard to say because the economy is doing well, but lots of people are still struggling, and people are having a hard time funding basic needs. I think it's become more and more imperative that people set aside money, not just for their retirement, but for their future medical needs. And the government might need to do some additional stuff to encourage that, either through tax breaks or something. It's a really difficult position because the government's trying to raise money for their own spending too. So they don't necessarily want to give more people tax breaks. But at the end of the day, I don't see the burden falling anywhere else except with each person. Some countries, people are funded through the government through their whole life. I don't see that ever happening in the U.S. It's just too expensive, and there's not enough kind of willpower to make that investment. So I think it's going to fall on the individuals and their families.
Regarding this article that you wrote, is there anything that you want to add or that you think that the listeners that are going to stumble across this episode should know about, or any recommendations? Should they be considering private pay instead of paying an actual company or corporation to outsource the hiring of these individuals? I'm just curious.
I mean, private pay, I think, is always a win-win. It's better for everybody involved, but it's a very difficult to find the right person. It's very difficult to coordinate everything, and that's why you have companies that do it. If it's possible to find an individual and pay them directly, the provider makes more money, and it's probably going to cost the family or the person that needs assistance less money. Every time you add a middleman to the mix, they're getting a slice of the pie. So it's not like it's an easy job to fill, and there's lots of different dynamics at play, including lots of states require some type of license, and you have to verify these things. That's why there's a lot of companies in that space. At the other end, the high end of the medical industry, there's physicians, their average salary is $210,000, $208,000. It's expected to grow, that type of job, by $55,000 by 2028. So there's a lot of room at the high end of the medical industry. There's a lot of people getting older. It's a good field to be in. Nursing is one of the highest paying jobs you can get with a BA. The top 10% of nurses are making over $105,000, so it's not a bad salary. So there's a lot of good things, and there's a lot of well-paying positions in medical field, but the type of jobs at the low end, they're quite difficult all the way around.
Well, the other number that I came across after talking with a gerontologist at Baylor College of Medicine is that there's about 5 million people currently today that have been diagnosed with dementia, and 60% of those typically are categorized as Alzheimer's, which is why Alzheimer's research is the most heavily funded of the dementias. But by 2050, there's expected to be 16 million individuals that have been diagnosed and are living with dementia. And so a lot of the people that I interact and come across with, obviously the most convenient and best option is for them to stay in the house that they've been living in for the last 30 years and not have to worry about putting all their stuff into storage or having an estate sale, and just keep all that items at home and hire a nurse to come to the house. But sometimes that's not possible because it's not affordable, or there becomes a family member that becomes the caregiver that's not professional, but there's this whole emotional stress that they experience as a result of witnessing the diminishing ability of their loved ones.
One area that might benefit and help people is there's a movement now to allow more areas to create an accessory dwelling unit on their property. So a lot of older people own a home free and clear if they're lucky, or they have a significant amount of equity in the home. And if some of the local jurisdictions allow these accessory dwelling units, then you can build a relatively inexpensive addition to the house. They can rent it out, and with that income, they can fund some personal care. And, you know, allows people to stay in the home where the vast majority of people have a much better lifestyle long term than being put in some type of facility. So I completely agree that it's the best option. And one way that people might be able to encourage it is to allow these local jurisdictions or push for these local jurisdictions to create accessory dwelling units and allow people to have an additional income stream from their current property.
Wow. What an excellent recommendation at the end of this episode. Thank you so much, Alex. And thank you for taking an interest in this episode and listening to it. If you liked what you heard, I encourage you to head over to www.homestretch101.com, where you'll find free resources, audiobooks, a link to Alex's article that was written, and some of the upcoming guests that we're planning to feature coming up. Also, consider subscribing to this podcast on whatever platform that you're listening to it on, whether that's on the website, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or the five other platforms that it's available on. Until our next conversation, I wish you good health and eternal love. Have a beautiful day.